Our next speaker is Cindy Ermus. She received her PhD in 2014 from Florida State University. You may see a pattern emerging here over the course of the panel. She is an assistant professor of history at the University of Lethbridge and is currently working on a manuscript entitled The Great European Plague Scare of 1720, A Global History of the Pest of Provence. Today, she will be delivering a paper on the Pest of Provence and the centralization of crisis management in the early 18th century. Cindy, please.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. And thank you to my panelists, of course, our commentator, our chair, and for to all of you for being here. A little bit here by way of introduction, as I am a newly minted PhD, after all, amongst other things, I study disasters. Not the most lighthearted material in the world, but certainly fascinating and important. And over the last few years, I've looked at events like the 1788 fire in Spanish colonial New Orleans, the 1755 Lisbon earthquake. I've paid special attention to events, of course, like Hurricane Katrina, the BP oil spill, Gulf South disasters, the Haiti earthquake. I've explored their short and long-term ramifications, their effects in neighboring regions, as well as the role of humans in turning what begin as hazards into actual forces of destruction. I've also explored the importance of reducing the vulnerability of populations, increasing resilience in the face of hazards such as hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, and disease outbreaks. Throughout the process of studying events like these, I've become increasingly interested in some of the questions that underlie all of this. Among them, whose responsibility is it to gauge and reduce vulnerability to potential hazards? And for that matter, to whom do we look in times of crisis to help clean up the mess? What I've found is that increasingly over the last couple centuries, the answer to this question has been the federal or centralized government. There has been a growing belief in a social contract of sorts in which the disaster, in which disaster victims have, quote, a democratic right to aid and recovery resources as members and citizens of a sovereign nation state, as sociologist Kevin Gotham has phrased it. Though we now seem to be battling, actually, a shift towards the privatization of disaster management to where non-local corporations rather than the central government are assuming responsibilities over disaster management, too often exploiting it for financial gain, we still ultimately believe in traditional ideas about democratic accountability. Essentially, what is the point of having a state in the first place if it cannot assist and protect its citizens in times of crisis? And so the question that follows from this is the one that I will focus on today. When did we begin to rely on the centralized government for assistance in times of crisis, and why? This is where the subject of today's talk comes in. The pest or plague of Provence, since plague of Marseille, I feel, doesn't reflect the outbreak's extent outside the city of Marseille. Now, the word disaster comes to us from the Greek and Latin terms for bad, star, or star-crossed event. Traditionally, it could constitute even small-scale disruptions to daily life, as the term was most commonly applied, in fact, which made sense for the more localized world of the past. Today, however, the United Nations International Strategy for Disaster Reduction defines the term as, quote, a serious disruption of the functioning of a community or a society involving widespread human, material, economic, or environmental losses and impacts, which exceeds the ability of the affected community or society to cope with its own resources. To cope using its own resources. And this is key. In this sense, the Provençal plague truly was a disaster. It arrived quickly and suddenly in 1720, and in a period of about 2 years, it took 126,000 lives in the French provinces of Provence and Languedoc. To give you an idea, the population around this time in Provence alone was about 600,000. By some accounts, at its height in 1720, it took about 1,000 lives per day in Marseille alone. It was thus a court durée event that, as we'll see, reveals long durée trends. The centralization of disaster management was a major part of state formation, and the Pest of Provence represents one of the earliest, if not the earliest, most pronounced instances of a rigorous, centralized response to disaster. While I'll be focusing on France today, reactions came from the capitals of emerging nation states all over Europe at this time, including Portugal, Spain, and England, despite the fact that the infection itself never spread beyond southeastern France. Each of these states responded with remarkable vigor to the French outbreak as a means to not only fend off the infection, but also to impose a variety of measures that would advance the very processes of administrative centralization and control that were already underway. In France, where early municipal responses to in Marseille, or lack thereof really, failed to prevent the infection from spreading outward into Provence, the administration in Paris, where the regent Philippe d'Orléans had moved in 1715, deployed military commanders, bestowed absolute authority upon municipal officials, and imposed martial law. And their efforts were ultimately a success. The plague did not spread beyond this region. In fact, this style of comprehensive centralized plague governance, supervision, and control during the 1720 outbreak was to serve as a model for the prevention and management of epidemics elsewhere in the world for decades, in fact. So what precisely did the royal government do? In August of 1720, the State Council of the King issued one of several comprehensive arrêts au sujet de la maladie contagieuse de la ville de Marseille, that suspended all commerce between Marseille and the rest of Provence under pain of death until January 1723, very much to the chagrin of local officials, although it would be eased before then. This arrêt expanded actually on an earlier initial blockade of Marseille that was issued in late July of 1720 by the Parlement of Aix, which would soon itself temporarily dissolve in the face of the spreading infection. Through various arrêts of August and September of 1720, movement out of Provence beyond the natural boundaries of the rivers Rhône, Verdon, and Durance were severely restricted through the use of strict quarantines and the use of certificats de santé. Restriction to movement was enforced through the use of military cordons or barriers. This military cordon sanitaire involved not only city bourgeois militias and provincial levies, but also a quarter of the regular army. In fact, about half of the correspondence, the total correspondence from 1720 until 1723 of Claude Leblanc, the Secretaire d'État de la Guerre, the Minister of War during much of the Regency, concerned this plague barrier. Interestingly also, the military cordon would eventually result in the Mur de la Peste, that the plague wall that we can still see parts of in parts of Provence today. As if it's been restored, but nevertheless, parts are still there. Ordinances from the royal government in September would lay out the manner in which the troops guarding the lines should behave and emphasize that no persons whatsoever were to stir out of the said places under pain of death. And these sanitary lines and regulations were strictly enforced. Even in some cases where higher profile officials wished to cross sanitary lines, the regent himself could, and occasionally did, step in to prevent it. Such was the case of one Sir Thomas Tipping, second baronet, a young man who hoped to pass out of Provence into Languedoc with his tutor and several servants in November of 1720. Cardinal Dubois, the Archbishop of Cambrai, and an English diplomat named Sir Robert Sutton actually petitioned the regent on Tipping's behalf, but the regent refused to make an exception, as Sutton himself related, quote, "I have renewed the instances which I formerly made on behalf of Sir Thomas Tipping, but that gentleman being unfortunately shut up within the lines, the regent cannot be prevailed on to make in his favor an exception to a rule hitherto very strictly observed by granting him leave to remove into Languedoc after the performance of a quarantine. His Royal Highness says he will not take upon himself a thing which he cannot justify, and that he is very confident the province of Languedoc would absolutely refuse to receive him anyway." One contemporary source reported in his diary years later, whatever the great ravages, as he put it, caused by the epidemic, things would have certainly been much worse had the royal government not put all precautions in place for, quote, "the king even sent troops to surround each location that was infected and prevent any communications." On September 5th in 1720, the crown appointed Charles Claude Andreau de Langeron, Maréchal in the King's Army, assigned him as commandant en chef, or chief commander-in-chief, I should say, of the city of Marche and its territory. Earlier that year, he had actually done ambassadorial work in Spain and was recalled from Spain to actually serve as commandant en chef in Marche to mitigate the outbreak, everything going on there. So along with the local echevins, or the municipal magistrates of Marche, he was responsible for overseeing the massive endeavor of municipal plague management on behalf of the king, including prevention and disinfections. For example, he saw to it that food and relief were distributed, that dogs and cats were slaughtered, which in this way eliminated some of the rats' most prominent predators, alas. Yeah. He saw to it that cannons were fired often to dispel miasmas, and that merchandise and other properties suspected of infection were burned. Excuse me. Streets, homes, and merchandise likewise underwent ritual disinfections and perfumings with vinegar or herbs such as lavender or rosemary. Along with local authorities, Langeron designated prayer days and organized religious processions while axing social events of all kinds, closing and regulating markets, taverns, inns, houses of ill repute in infected areas. All shut down. The regent in Paris even sent orders to permanently banish out of Marseille all orders of monks who failed to attend the sick and offer the last rites, which is a problem in times of plague since forever, basically. Fundamentally, Langeron was charged with executing martial law, and he had absolute powers in matters pertaining to the policing and the administration of the city. In September of 1720, Sir Robert Sutton, same gentleman we mentioned earlier, wrote from Paris, quote, "They write from Marseille that Monsieur de Langeron, commandant of that place, continues to take all possible precautions to prevent the spreading of the plague, as well by causing the dead bodies to be burned and by daily watering the streets, which is found to be of great service." Crown control was further expressed through the creation of new bureaux of health in Provence, and most notably in the spring of 1721, a new Conseil de Santé, or Council of Health in Paris, that was to meet twice a week at the Louvre. And it consisted, quote, of the princes of the blood, the chancellor, the Marshal de Villeroy, the comptroller general, the secretaries of the state, and the king's own first physician, before whom all the letters relating to the infected or suspected places are to be laid so that they could give the necessary directions upon them. Both the new and the previously established health bureaus in Provence were now to operate under this conseil in the capital. This council was to keep careful record of and control over all aspects of crisis management in southern France during the plague, directing, for example, the distribution of food and aid from the royal treasury, the quarantining of infected towns, and of course the measures to be taken in cities suspected of plague in the region. Together, Langeron and the Conseil served as integral links in a tight network that connected southeastern France with the capital and allowed for centralized management and supervision. In fact, the communication of information was brought under increased royal regulation during the outbreak, as all individual Bureaux de la Santé in Provence were ordered to submit monthly registers to Paris at this point. These consisted of information on a variety of health-related points, and according to Junko Takeda, historian, included such details as the number of staff employed at hospitals to dispose of bodies, updated mortality rates, the number of patients, the number and quality of beds, sheets, drugs, aromatics, provisions, and personnel, both religious and secular, available at each hospital. So down to very minute details. In April 1721, also English newspapers began reporting from Paris that, quote, the Duke Regent had given orders to Messieurs Paris, the famous Paris brothers, financiers, to send 2 million of livres in specie into Provence for the relief of such places as are yet infected with the plague. And directions are likewise given to the intendants of the neighboring provinces to furnish them with all sorts of provisions. By June, the Paris brothers, along with Samuel Bernard, in fact, who according to Saint-Simon was the richest and most famous financier in Europe, had indeed advanced 2 million livres, quote, toward the relief of the miserable Provençals, as it was reported. In some, much like previous plague outbreaks, the epidemic of 1720 saw the issuing of strict quarantines, the use of sanitary cordons to restrict travel, and traditional methods of disinfection were also seen, including the use of vinegar, smoke, loud sounds, which I always got a kick out of. Officials regulated the movements of people, issued curfews, and required certificates of health for mobility. Smuggling practice also came under tighter scrutiny and control. During the Peste of Provence, however, practices like these, which previously rested in the hands of municipal officials, were now controlled and overseen by the central government and its newly established Conseil de la Santé in Paris. The royal government placed its men on the ground in Provence, issued all necessary arrests, and demanded to be kept aware of any and all developments throughout plague years. The crown was heavily involved in the management of this crisis than ever before, signifying an increasing concentration of state oversight that would continue over the 18th century and in fact survive the French Revolution. All of this was in line with the increase of state power and the rise of the centralized state that had been taking place over the 17th to 18th centuries. In fact, the energetic and robust response from the royal government to the crisis in Provence comes as no surprise if, for example, we accept James Collins's premise that, quote, the transition from immature to mature monarchical state happened roughly between 1690 and 1725 in France. In the first years of the 18th century, France was seeing increases in population, urbanization, production, as more and more people left their small towns for bigger ones and in larger numbers. In 1716, Paris even saw the establishment of its first actual fire department. At the same time, people came to expect the government to expand its role in such areas, as James Collins points out, as police, poor relief, education, and sanitation in public works. And the state created a bureaucracy that became steadily more professional, more intrusive, and more threatening to elites as the century wore on. This was no less the case in times of crisis, as we see during the Peste of Provence, which the government used partly as an opportunity to showcase the integrity and value of the state by extending its reach into previously local matters and proving itself useful. The Provençal plague represents a major moment in the history, then, of disaster management in the West and possibly in the world. In my research, I'm currently figuring out how far it goes. At least since the second plague pandemic of the mid-14th century, the handling of crises in France and in Europe consisted of more localized implementation of sanitary, preventative, and relief mechanisms with little or no central supervision or guidance. A product of the more regionalized organization of the European political landscape previously. By the late 17th and early 18th centuries, however, we see the monopolization of power in the expansion and intensification of state interference in previously regional or local matters. This becomes most evident in the state's response to the Peste of Provence. Once it was established that plague had indeed arrived in Marseille, there was a great deal of doubt at first, resulting from corrupt officials on the ground who didn't want to be financially cut off from their trade. The crown stepped in to amplify surveillance and police presence, issue quarantines, directions for carrying them out in all infected towns, issue a comprehensive arrêt that restricted all travel to and from affected areas, and they established military cordons. This shift coincided with the rise of state power and the gradual development of modern nation states, which had only gained impetus since the Peace of Westphalia in a lot of ways in 1648, and which Voltaire actually referred to as the basis for all future treaties because of its recognition of such concepts as national self-determination, coexisting sovereign states, and the balance of power, the latter of which would represent, in fact, a major cause in the War of Spanish Succession and a major theme in the resulting Treaty of Utrecht. In the end, the epidemic of 1720 to 1722 symbolized a break from the past, marked in part by a more involved central government and augmented communication between the crown and city officials that represents an early example of the more modern, comprehensive state-centralized response system to disasters that we see all over the globe today. Ultimately, the Peste of Provence very much represented both the last chapter in the book of medieval plagues and the first chapter in the book of modern disease outbreaks and disasters. Thank you.